You know, when I think about ancient letters, I usually picture something, pretty formal and stuffy.
Right.
But the Apostle Paul's letters to the Corinthians and the Galatians, let's just say those are anything but boring.
Yeah.
You've given us this academic lecture analyzing these letters, and I'm already hooked by the pure drama unfolding within them.
I think what's so fascinating is how these letters written nearly 2,000 years ago still resonate with our modern struggle.
Absolutely.
You know, Paul's grappling with leadership challenges, navigating cultural clashes, and facing opposition from within the very communities he helped establish.
Yeah, it's like peeking behind the curtain of early Christianity and realizing it wasn't all peace and harmony, right?
Right?
I mean, Corinth in particular seems like a real hotbed of tension. The lecture even describes it as a city known for its, well, liberal social life.
To say the least, Corinth was a bustling port city, a melting pot of cultures, and yes, known for its excesses. And this backdrop undoubtedly shaped the early Christian community there and led to some of the conflicts that Paul addresses in his letters.
So in this deep dive, I'm hoping we can unpack not just what happened, but why it matters.
Okay.
What can we learn from Paul's struggles as a leader and a believer even today?
That's a great question, and I think it's key to understanding the enduring power of these letters.
Yeah.
They offer us a window into the messy reality of faith, leadership, and community,
Yeah.
challenges that are as relevant now as they were then.
For sure. Let's start with the Corinthians.
Okay.
The lecture mentions that Paul wrote at least four letters to them, though we only have two that have survived, as what we now call 1st and 2nd Corinthians.
Right.
What happened between those letters is a bit of a mystery,
Yeah.
but apparently it was intense enough to prompt a painful letter that Paul mentions.
It's intriguing, isn't it? Paul describes this lost letter as being written with much distress and anguish of heart
Wow.
because of conflicts and challenges to his authority. It really makes you wonder what exactly went down
Yeah.
that caused him such grief.
Well, the lecture does point to these super apostles as a source of tension.
Yeah.
Were these guys like the rock stars of early Christianity?
In a way, yeah. They were rivals who challenged Paul's authority, presented an alternative version of the Christian message,
Wow.
and may have even questioned his credentials as an apostle. Think power struggles, differing interpretations of the faith, maybe even a dash of jealousy.
Oh, yeah.
It's a familiar story even today.
It's like high school drama, but with eternal consequences.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got Paul battling these super apostles, facing opposition from within the Corinthian church,
Right.
pouring out his heart in these emotionally charged letters. That sets the stage for 2 Corinthians, where things get really interesting.
Yes. And here's where Paul's approach to leadership really stands out. Instead of boasting about his accomplishments or trying to overpower his opponents,
Right.
he does something unexpected. He highlights his weaknesses and suffering.
That's pretty counterintuitive. Why would he do that?
Yeah.
Isn't a leader supposed to project strength and confidence?
That's what makes Paul so fascinating.
Yeah.
He flips the script on leadership, arguing that his vulnerability is proof of his authenticity.
Interesting.
He even describes this mysterious thorn in the flesh, some ongoing struggle that
Yeah.
God refused to remove.
Wow.
He suggests that it's through our weakness that God's power is made perfect.
So he's saying, look, I'm not perfect. I'm flawed. I struggle, but that's where I find my strength.
Yeah.
That resonates with me more than some picture of a flawless leader, to be honest.
Absolutely. It challenges our modern assumptions about what it means to be a leader.
Yeah.
Paul's approach suggests that vulnerability and authenticity can actually be sources of strength, allowing us to connect with others on a deeper level.
For sure. Okay, so we've got drama, intrigue, and a thought-provoking leadership model.
Right.
What about the letter to the Galatians? What's the story there?
Well, first, there's a little geographical puzzle to solve.
Okay.
Unlike Corinth, which was a specific city,
Right.
Galatia could refer to either a region in North Central Asia Minor or a Roman province further south. The lecture leans toward the South Galatia theory, linking it to cities Paul visited on his missionary journeys.
So even pinning down where this letter was sent is a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
And then there's the matter of Paul's tone,
Yeah.
which you said is even more intense than in his letters to the Corinthians.
Yes, while 2 Corinthians had that painful letter embedded within it, Galatians is like one giant passionate outburst from beginning to end.
Yeah.
It's as if he's saying, I can't even believe I have to write this, but you are messing up big time.
The lecture mentioned that he skips the usual pleasantries, jumping right into a scathing rebuke. What could have caused such a dramatic shift in tone?
It seems the culprits were a group known as the Judaizers. They were Jewish Christians who insisted that Gentile converts to Christianity needed to follow Jewish law, including circumcision. This wasn't just a theological debate.
Right.
It struck at the heart of what it meant to be Christian in Paul's view.
So was this like a cultural clash? Were the Judaizers worried that Gentile Christians weren't Jewish enough?
There was definitely a cultural element to it,
yeah.
But it went deeper than that. It was about how people are saved, how they are made right with God.
Mm.
The Judaizers believed that faith in Jesus plus adherence to Jewish law was necessary for salvation.
And Paul vehemently disagreed,
yeah.
Right? That's where his whole justification by faith idea comes in.
Exactly. This is the core of Paul's message in Galatians.
Okay.
He argues passionately that salvation comes through faith in Jesus Christ alone, not by following rules and rituals.
Right.
He's furious that the Galatians are being swayed by this other gospel because it undermines the radical inclusivity of Christianity.
So what's the big deal? Huh? Why was Paul so adamant about this point?
Well, it's important to remember that Christianity was still a fledgling movement at this time, trying to define itself within the larger context of Judaism. Paul was fighting for a vision of Christianity that was open to all people, regardless of their background or their ability to perfectly follow the law. He saw this as the fulfillment of God's promise to Abraham.
And the Judaizers were essentially saying, hold on, you can't just bypass centuries of tradition and law. There's a process here.
Right. And you can understand their perspective. They were coming from a place of deep reverence for the law, seeing it as God's gift to his people.
Mm-hmm.
But Paul believed that Christ had ushered in a new era, a new covenant, where the law was no longer the defining marker of God's people.
Okay.
Faith in Christ was the key.
Okay. So we've got this theological showdown brewing.
Yeah.
How does Paul make his case in Galatians logic, emotion, guilt trips?
Okay.
What's his strategy?
He uses all the above Galatians as a masterclass in persuasive writing.
Wow.
Even if it's a bit rough around the edges.
Sure.
He appeals to his own authority as an apostle recounts his conversion experience and even mentions his interactions with the other apostles in Jerusalem to establish his credibility.
The lecture highlighted a couple of trips Paul made to Jerusalem.
Yes.
How do those fit into the story?
They're crucial for establishing Paul's credibility.
Okay.
He's essentially saying, look, I've been there. I've talked to Peter and James, the other leaders, and they agree with me.
Hmm.
It was his way of countering the claims of the Judaizers, who might have been suggesting that he was a rogue agent teaching his own made-up version of the gospel.
So he's dropping the mic saying, don't try to tell me. I don't know what I'm talking about.
You can definitely see it that way.
Yeah.
And speaking of dramatic flourishes, the lecture mentions a fascinating detail about the end of Galatians. Paul gets so worked up that he grabs the pen from his scribe.
Oh, wow.
And writes the final verses in large letters.
Wait, really? Like in the original text, you can see where he took over the writing.
That's how many scholars interpret it.
Wow.
Some have speculated that he had bad eyesight.
Right.
But more likely it was a deliberate act to add weight to his words.
Yeah.
It's as if he's saying, listen up, people. This is important.
Wow. That's quite an ending. So we have Paul fired up fighting for his vision of Christianity, facing down opponents, and literally putting his own hand to the parchment.
Right.
To emphasize this point, I can see why these letters are still studied and debated today.
Absolutely. They're raw, they're messy, and they offer a glimpse into the early church as it wrestled with fundamental questions about identity, authority, and the nature of salvation.
Yeah.
And these letters remind us that faith isn't always neat and tidy.
Right.
It's often forged in the midst of conflict and struggle.
And that sometimes even the greatest leaders have to get a little passionate, even a little angry.
Yes.
To make their point. But there's so much more to unpack, especially about what this all means for us today.
Okay.
In part two of this deep dive, let's explore the nuances and implications of these fascinating letters.
Sounds good.
Okay, we've delved into the drama of Paul's letters, but I have to admit, some of the theological ideas still feel a bit abstract to me.
Sure.
Like this whole justification by faith concept.
Right.
What does that actually mean for, you know, regular people?
That's a question that has resonated through the centuries.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the most powerful ideas in Paul's letters.
Okay.
It boils down to this. We're made right with God, not through our own efforts or good deeds, but by placing our trust in Jesus Christ and accepting his sacrifice.
So it's not about checking all the boxes on some cosmic to-do list.
Exactly.
That does take the pressure off.
And that's where Paul gets so worked up in Galatians.
Yeah.
He sees the Judaizers' insistence on following the law as a threat to this core idea of grace. It's like they're saying, Christ's sacrifice wasn't enough. You have to do more.
It's almost like trying to pay for a gift someone's already given you freely, right? It kind of cheapens the whole thing.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
And it gets to the heart of why this debate was so significant.
Yeah.
Paul believed that salvation is a gift, not something we earn.
Okay.
And that has implications for how we live our lives.
So it's not a get-out-of-jail-free card where you can just do whatever you want because you're covered by grace.
Not at all. Paul is clear that true faith should lead to a transformed life.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about fruit of the Spirit, qualities like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, and faithfulness.
Okay.
These are the natural outpouring of a heart that has been changed by grace.
But isn't that where the tension between faith and works comes in?
Right.
If it's all about grace, why even bother trying to be good?
That's a question that has stumped theologians for centuries.
For sure.
Paul doesn't shy away from the tension.
Okay.
He emphasizes that good works flow from gratitude, not from a desire to earn God's favor.
Mm.
It's about living a life worthy of the gift we've been given.
Okay, that makes sense. But let's be honest, even with the best intentions, we mess up. How does Paul address that very human reality in his letters?
He embraces it.
Really?
Remember that thorn in the flesh we talked about?
Right, yeah.
It reminds us that even Paul, this towering figure in early Christianity, faced his own struggles.
Uh-huh.
And instead of hiding them, he shares them, even suggesting that suffering can draw us closer to God.
That's perspective I haven't really considered before.
Right.
I guess we often see suffering as something to avoid at all costs.
Yeah.
But Paul seems to suggest it can actually be a source of strength and growth.
Absolutely. And that's a radical idea even today.
Yeah.
It goes against our culture's obsession with comfort and ease.
Right.
Paul shows us that our weaknesses, our vulnerabilities, can become places where God's power shines through.
And that reminds me of what we were talking about with Paul's leadership style in 2 Corinthians.
Yeah.
He wasn't afraid to be vulnerable, to admit his weaknesses, and I think that's part of what makes him such a compelling figure, even all these centuries later.
I completely agree. It's refreshing to see a leader who isn't putting on a facade of perfection.
Yeah.
In fact, Paul suggests that it's through those cracks in our armor, those moments of vulnerability,
right,
that we can connect with others authentically and offer them true support.
It's like those Japanese kintsugi bowls where they repair broken pottery with gold,
right,
making the cracks part of the beauty of the piece. Paul's approach to leadership is kind of like that, isn't it?
What a beautiful image. I love that.
Yeah.
And it highlights how our so-called imperfections can become sources of strength and even beauty when we allow God's grace to work in and through them.
So we've talked about grace work, suffering, and even touched on leadership. I'm curious, though.
Yeah.
How does Paul see these ideas playing out in the context of community?
Okay.
I mean, he's writing these letters to churches, not just individuals.
That's an excellent point, and it's something that's really emphasized in 1 Corinthians, especially.
Okay.
Paul sees the church as a body where each individual part has a role to play.
Mm-hmm.
He stresses the importance of unity and working together for the common good.
So it's not just about personal piety. It's about how we live out our faith in relation to others.
Precisely. And this is where the love chapter, 1 Corinthians 13, comes in.
Right.
Paul describes love as the greatest of all virtues, the one that binds everything together. He doesn't offer a sentimental view of love either. He talks about patience, kindness, humility, and even a willingness to confront difficult issues.
Which is exactly what he does in these letters.
Yeah.
He's not afraid to call out hypocrisy or address harmful behavior.
Right.
But it seems he always does it from a place of love and concern for the well-being in the community.
You've hit the nail on the head,
okay.
And that's a model we can all learn from, whether we're talking about church communities,
right,
or any kind of group we're part of.
Yeah.
True leadership involves both grace and truth, both affirmation and correction.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground here, from the nitty-gritty theological debates to the practical implications for how we live our lives,
right,
and relate to others. But we're not quite done yet, are we?
Nope.
What other treasures are waiting to be uncovered in these letters?
There's still so much to explore.
Yeah.
In the final part of our deep dive, I think it would be fascinating to consider how Paul's message speaks to the challenges we face today in a world that often feels very different from the one he lived in.
We've been on quite a journey with Paul's letters.
Yeah.
I have to admit, when we started this deep dive, I wasn't sure how relevant these ancient texts would be to my life.
Right.
But I'm finding so many points that resonate.
Right, yeah.
Especially as we've been discussing grace, leadership, and community.
It's remarkable, isn't it, how even across centuries and cultures, these core human struggles remain.
Absolutely.
Paul's wrestling with these issues feels so relatable even today.
So as we wrap up our deep dive, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on how Paul's message speaks to the challenges we face in the 21st century.
Okay.
It's a very different world from the one he lived in.
Yeah, it is.
But I'm sensing some timeless truths emerging here.
You're right. The world has changed dramatically, but the human heart, I think, hasn't changed that much.
Yeah.
We still long for connection, meaning, and purpose.
Right.
And we still face similar temptations to rely on our own efforts to seek validation through achievements and to measure ourselves against others.
That's so true. It seems like we're constantly bombarded with messages telling us we need to do more, be more, have more.
Right.
It's easy to get caught up in that cycle and lose sight of what truly matters.
And that's where Paul's message of grace is so refreshing.
Yeah.
He reminds us that our worth isn't based on what we accomplish or how perfectly we follow the rules.
Right.
We're accepted and loved by God simply because of who we are, not because of what we do.
That's incredibly freeing, but it also challenges the way we often view success and achievement. I mean, if it's not about climbing the ladder and proving ourselves,
right,
then what is it about?
That's a great question, and I think Paul points us toward a different kind of success.
Okay.
One that's rooted in love, service, and humility. It's not about building ourselves up, but about building others up, using our gifts and talents to make a difference in the world.
So it's less about me and more about we.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that resonates so strongly with Paul's vision of community.
Yeah.
The idea of the church as a body where each part is essential. In a world that often feels fragmented and individualistic, I think we crave that sense of belonging,
yeah,
of being part of something bigger than ourselves.
And that brings me to the idea of leadership.
Yeah.
We've talked about Paul's unique style, how he embraced vulnerability.
Yes.
And acknowledged his own weaknesses. Do you think that kind of leadership is still relevant in today's world?
I think it's more relevant than ever. In a culture that often values charisma and outward appearances,
right,
authenticity is a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
Leaders who are willing to be real, to share their struggles, and to lead from a place of humility are the ones who inspire trust and loyalty.
It's funny because those are the qualities I admire in people, whether they're in a leadership position or not.
Right.
I'm drawn to people who are genuine, who aren't afraid to show their human side.
Me too. Yeah. And I think that's part of why Paul's letters continue to resonate with us. He's not just preaching from a position of authority.
Right.
He's sharing his own journey, his own doubts, his own moments of despair. He's a fellow traveler, not a distant guru.
That makes him so much more relatable, and his message becomes more accessible. It's not just abstract theology.
Right.
It's lived experience.
Precisely. And that's what makes these letters so powerful. They invite us to grapple with these timeless questions of faith, grace, and community alongside Paul.
Yeah.
They remind us that we're not alone in our struggles.
As we wrap up this deep dive, what's one final thought you'd like to leave our listener with?
I would simply encourage our listener to keep exploring Paul's letters, to let them challenge your assumptions.
Okay.
And to allow them to speak to your heart. These are living words that still have the power to transform us, to inspire us, and to draw us closer to God and to one another.
That's a beautiful way to put it. It's been a fascinating journey, and I feel like I've gained a whole new appreciation for Paul and his message.
Me too. It's always a privilege to delve into these texts and to discover fresh insights along the way.
Well, thanks for joining me on this deep dive into the world of Paul's letters. It's been an enlightening conversation. Until next time, keep seeking, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.